Up in the morning and in the field, breaking my back just to pay my bills. Loving what I do till the day I'm dead. I'll be working on my old homestead.
Welcome back, folks. This is Lloyd Creech II.
Paul McDaniel.
And you're listening to Radio Hour with EKH on 104.9 FM, WSKV, Stanton, Kentucky. Hope everybody's having a great and wonderful winter before Christmas weekend.
Well, looking at that sun out there, you'd think it was springtime, but you go around the corner, it sure wasn't.
The wind cuts you in two. It's like a high of 42 or something like
that. Well, I think some places it wasn't even that high.
And stuff. I've been working on plumbing before we came in here, so the water was cold, and then, you know, you get it on your hands and everything, and it makes 10 times harder to grip anything. And then you go outside and hit that wind and stuff, and it dries you out real quick and would freeze you to death. And
well, that's one reason I decided to shut the job down up there at Millersburg. I was working with cement, and as long as I was in the cellar working on that rock, I was all right. But as soon as I come out to the wheelbarrow to get some more, you know, it that wind hit me and that cold cement, and I said, well, I'm not going to do this.
You know, I come up there on that Thursday and stuff, the day you shut that job down, and we looked all over that house. We went outside and everything. I never made it to the cellar.
Well, you said something about you'd get really upset if you bumped your head.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I did say that.
Well, there must have been midgets that built that house. Cause I've got bumps on my head to prove it.
And so back then, people were not as tall as they are now.
Well, the thing about that house, Lloyd, it was Scotsman's that built it. Now, the rooms are, it's got 9-foot ceilings downstairs and up. But when they dug that cellar out for that house, they dug it down to a solid limestone base. Uh-huh. They couldn't dig it any deeper.
Yeah.
So that's what they started with, and then they, you know.
They built up from there. And the house we're talking about and stuff, Paul's been working on what, about a year, year and a half?
Well, off and on for probably about 5 years, because a guy had it originally. I did a lot of work to it.
Uh-huh.
You know, did some structure, you know, fixed it up. And then he sold it to a guy from Australia. Uh-huh. And now we're going gung-ho on it.
Okay. And beautiful, absolutely beautiful log house. It's a three-story?
Well, a two-story log, but it's up underneath the roof. You can stand up and walk up there. Uh-huh. Now, it had an old whole floor up there. It used to have a staircase, went up into the...
Okay.
Out of there. We took that out, and then just on one end, we put a loft in it. Okay. You can stand up and walk around the loft, so, uh-huh. You know, it's got a lot of room in it. The logs upstairs are over 8 foot off the floor. That's unusual for most of what they call two-story log houses. Were just about a story and a half, you know. Yeah. Maybe went up 3 or 4 foot, and, you know,
that stuff. But it, beautiful log house, got a 12-foot porch all the way wraps all the way around it.
Yeah, that's neat.
What was that tree and stuff?
It was a chickie pin.
Chickie pin tree. It's the oldest living chickie pin tree in Bourbon County.
Yeah. Well, the house itself is called a 2-over-2
log
house, and it's the oldest standing 2-over-2 in Bourbon County. And then it's in the Bourbon County Blue Book, they call it.
Uh-huh.
And the tree is older than the house. The house was built in 1757.
Okay.
But that puts it, what do you figure, one day, 265 years, yeah, somewhere in there, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the tree's supposed to be like 350 years old.
Yeah.
And it's a big spreading oak. I mean, it's got big branches everywhere, and it's got roots that travel all the way almost to the pond down there.
Yeah. Probably does, yeah. I'd have to say so.
We were talking about how many broken arms come out of that tree, you know, over the years, children playing in it. Pick a talk.
How many inches across that tree?
You know, I have never measured it, but it would probably take four people touching, so I'd say it's probably 10 foot anyway.
Oh, yeah, all the way around the tree and stuff. It's huge tree and stuff, beautiful tree. And then it's got the well there at the house. It's about, what?
26 foot deep, I believe. And they dug it for them to know water was there, because they only dug down about 8 foot. Through dirt, and then they hit solid limestone, and they quarried all the way down through that lime till they hit a vein of water.
Yeah.
And for them to know back then that, okay, there's water down there, to bust through all that rock to get down there and get it.
Yeah.
But now the well itself is probably 6 foot across. It, when it's full, it holds a whole lot of water.
Yeah. And so just absolutely wonderful place over there in Millersburg. Paul said, man, you got to come over and look this. You got to come over and look. So I took off there Thursday, went over and looked at it, and just absolute, y'all done a good job.
Well, thank you.
And stuff, restoring that house stuff. Paul's a rock mason and a log house restorer, I guess you would call it. And
slash anything that tastes for dog food and cat food.
And so, but they've done an awesome job and stuff. The hearths are awesome. The fireplaces, the keystone's really cool looking.
Yeah, they were all falling out. I had to put jacks underneath them and get them all back in place. And there's a fireplace in the cellar also.
Yeah.
And I'd say when they first built the house, they probably lived in the two rock rooms in the cellar before they got the whole house finished. And then I'd say in the wintertime when it got real cold,
yeah,
you know, they went down that cellar because you had all that geothermal heat and had a fireplace down there they could cook and heat. Mm-hmm. And
probably, you're probably right on that one.
It did a cool house.
Last weekend, Teresa and I, when we was on here last week and stuff, we said we was going to do some stuff. Every weekend for the month of December leading up to Christmas, we go to a different place and do a different thing every weekend, and that's just going to be a tradition. And like we're doing Southern Lights this weekend. Last weekend we went up to let me make sure this is right. Okay, Dogwood Pass in Beaver, Ohio, and the Christmas Cave in Memphis, Ohio. They probably ain't 10-15 minutes away from each other. Dogwood Pass is a farm out in the middle of nowhere that has a Wild West town mock-up.
Wild West?
out in the field on the side of this hill. They've got the saloon, they've got the blacksmith, they got the barber, they got the doctor, they got all these little stores. I thought before we went, they would just be faux fronts and stuff, false fronts. When we got there, all of them are actually small buildings put together. And so you can go in the doctor's office and see the bed and see the nightstand.
So it's authentic.
It was as authentic as they could do. The saloon was really cool. They actually have drinks inside there, not alcoholic drinks, but just, you know, drinks and stuff there. They had an actual gun and ammo store in one of the buildings. They had the jail actually had a jail cell in it. And so if you think of this Wild West town out west, is located in Ohio and stuff. It's in Beaver, Ohio. This being the month of December, they had a live show of a bank robbery and somebody breaking out of jail. They used live horses. And then in the last show that we seen that day is they had the Grinch and the townspeople doing different things for Christmas and everything. So it was really cool. If you like Wild West TV shows and stuff like that, you would probably love this little town.
That'd be kind of unusual, though, if you know, you had a show out there, two guys getting ready to draw on each other, and they went to talking Buckeye, though. It's just like, hey, you, pull that gun out.
And stuff. The guns are recreation.
Old Colts
and everything. They actually fire and stuff, but they fire blanks and everything.
Well.
And it's really cool. Live action stories that go along and stuff. They have a story, and then you can walk around town for an hour or so, and then they have another story and stuff. They got a bleachered area to where you can sit on the bleachers and watch the shows there. They have a church. They do have a Roy Rogers Museum there.
Well, that's cool.
With a lot of memorabilia, a lot of toys, a lot of...
Well, I think he is from Ohio, isn't he, originally?
I do not know.
I don't think he was a Wild West guy. He just played that in movies.
Yeah, played it in movies and everything. Well, he has a museum there, and he has the Indian headdress that he used in one of the movies or TV shows or something or other is on display there.
Well, that's cool.
One of his costumes is there. Several of the guns that he used and everything were there. And so if you all like I said, the Wild West stuff, you need to check this out. It's in Beaver, Ohio, which is southeast Ohio. The next one on the list here is the Christmas Cave. And so it is a old gravel mine that's in Minford, Ohio, which is about 15 minutes away from this Dogwood Pass. And during Christmas, they have a lit nativity scene. It goes back in about a half mile and then circles back around back to the exit there. It's all lit up. It has God telling them that they're going to have a baby and everything. And it tells the whole story all the way through the cave and then all the way to Christmas and everything. So
that's cool.
The life and death of Jesus Christ and everything. Really cool to go to. This place was, both places were packed. Dogwood Pass had a bunch of people there, but the Christmas Cave had a buku of people there. Where the cave is so big and everything, they had four parking lots, completely full.
In the cave?
No, just on the outside of the cave.
Okay, yeah.
And then on the inside, they had places where you could get a hot popcorn or caramel corn, kettle corn, hot drinks and everything. And then you could go through the cave and everything. And the Christmas Cave was completely free. All they do is they take donations outside the entrance and the exit and stuff. They used to charge $1 for entry and then $2 to park and stuff. They don't even do that anymore.
Well,
and stuff. When you go in, there's a big black box for donations and stuff to help keep that thing rolling and stuff. And so if you're looking for a easy, cheap thing to do during the month of December, check that out. And that was in Minford, Ohio, which it's only about a two-hour drive from here, two-hour and 20-minute drive from here. The way we went, we went up to 64 and got just past Grayson, got on the Industrial Highway, took off up to 23, Highway 23, and went up to Ohio that way. Crossed the bridge, and it was probably, I don't know, 30 minutes from the bridge.
Well, see, you weren't too far from where I grew up in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah.
And so it's just outside of Portsmouth. All this stuff's out just outside of Portsmouth, Ohio. And so it's really cool. The Christmas Cave was really cool and everything. Like I said, a lot of people there. And then the Dogwood Pass and stuff. Awesome. I'm going back for sure.
Well, caves have an attraction. I mean, people want to go to caves.
Yeah.
I don't care where they're at.
And stuff. You got Kentucky Down Under. You got Lights Under Louisville and stuff. You got all these different cities that uses these caves for a good reason.
Well, there's a cave up my cliff called Peter Cave, and I took some people in there a couple weekends ago, and they just... They went off and they said, "Oh man, this is so cool!" You know.
I see up there in Ohio and stuff. It was kind of cool on the outside, but you know it stays 55, 58
yeah,
degrees.
Yeah, I mean you got that geothermal heat
underground stuff, and then you add all those people inside there.
Yeah,
and stuff. It was probably easy 70 degrees inside that cave, and stuff with all the body heat and everything that was walking through there. And the lights, the heat coming off the lights.
Yeah, you have to.
And so just an awesome experience. We will be going back to Dogwood Pass in the summertime because they have different shows and stuff going on. They had a petting zoo outside the main gate. Just different things, activities that you can see there. I think Dogwood Pass was $10 or $15 per person. Kids 3 and under was free. So... it was just a really good experience.
Well, I bet Bubby liked that.
He did and stuff. He loves people. Bubby is a people person. And so he enjoyed every minute of it. And then the funny part of the Dogwood Pass is when the Grinch and everything. They caught the Grinch, and the Grinch, you know, they gave him a heart and everything, and so he started becoming real and started softening up and everything. They broke out into, I can't remember the singer's name, Will Smith. They broke out into Will Smith's Wild Wild West song and stuff that came out years ago. And when he heard that song come on and stuff, son, he went to bopping up and down and dancing and carrying on. It was quite funny and stuff. He had a smile on his face all the whole time and stuff. And
when that song came on, you should have videoed that.
We have a video of it. I think it's on Teresa's phone and stuff. But it was a really good time.
Yeah.
All right, Paul, you got anything to talk about on here today?
Well, I had a couple things on my mind, but it's the same as every time I come over here. They're on my mind all the way across the mountain, and then they're not. I was telling you about the methane thing. You know, we're just for homesteaders, people, you know, times are getting hard. You know, people can't afford a whole lot of anything. And I was thinking the other day, this one thing they got on the news all the time about this new energy source, where they shoot a hydrogen particle with a laser,
uh-huh,
and they said they can produce more power than what they're putting into it.
Yeah.
Well, Mother Earth News years ago had a methane collecting outhouse, you know, where you just collected your methane and then compressed it.
Yeah.
And you could run a hot water heater or a gas cooking stove or whatnot.
Yeah, actually, I remember the article you're talking about. It was called a methane biodigester. We talked about it on here years ago and stuff. So it's a concrete capsule that you put a water bladder in, and the bladder has all the fruits and vegetables that you would eat.
Well, that's when you just make a producing it besides just going in your outhouse.
Yeah, going in and out and stuff. But you put your human waste in it. You put cattle waste in it. You can put fruits and vegetable waste in it, and the water pressurizes it so that it can be piped into your house or barn or mm-hmm, whatever. But like you said, you can run your hot water heater off of it. You can run lights off of it and stuff, just like the old Coleman lantern, lanterns and stuff. The ones that propane or something like that?
Well, you know, you'd see these little lights, and I've got several of them. I used them for years that the old campers had in them, uh-huh, and hung on the walls. You know, and before I had any kind of electricity, that's what I used for lights in my house.
Uh-huh.
But what really got me thinking about it a lot is I've got solar electric,
uh-huh,
and I've got a hydroelectric backup.
Uh-huh.
Well, here for 2 weeks, we haven't had any sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if you ain't got soul out there, you ain't got no electric. And when we haven't had any water in the ground, so my hydroelectric plant hasn't been working.
Yeah.
So I've been very, very conservative. And I was thinking, well, you know, I've got my septic tank sits there right next to the house. And
You're going to pop into it?
Well, I was thinking, you know, you could take a 12-volt compressor,
uh-huh,
and compress enough into a small enough tank that at least I could be using my hot water heater or, you know, cooking or something minor.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just trying to figure out ways, you know, I can exist down there without going on the grid, which I'm not going to.
Yeah, you're
but, you know,
you're far enough off, you don't have to worry about going on. So,
you know, everybody says, well, you got solar electric, you never have to worry about electric bill or this or that or anything. You know, there's still maintenance. And then if you don't have any sunlight, I don't have any electricity.
Yeah. And where it's been cloudy and rainy and real foggy and stuff like that, we've not had enough sun. No. Solar panels will still produce electricity if there's no sun and stuff, but you still got to have sunny days.
Well, you get the voltage, but you don't get the amperage.
Uh-huh.
You know, my controllers, you know, they tell me how many volts I'm pulling in from my panels. And, you know, I've got switches on my controllers where I can set perimeters.
Yeah.
So I can set it up for maximum charge. I can set it up to charge 24-volt systems if I wanted.
Yeah.
But I'll be reading 22 volts coming in there, but I'll look over where it's reading amps, and it'll be reading 1.2 amps, you know?
Yeah.
And I've got probably 15,000 amps worth of batteries.
Uh-huh.
So that's a real slow.
Yeah.
You know, it's not doing it. And here lately, I've been down, my meters are reading about 51% charge. Now, today, they charged up.
Yeah.
you know.
And stuff had plenty of sunshine. You got, yeah. We just finally got some rain in here that was worthwhile.
Yeah, my hydroelectric plant's back working somewhat, but it's still, we're still several inches below what we need rain-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need some more.
And so, you know, when it rains, it takes 3 or 4 days for that rain to
get
down,
in the ground.
Into the ground. And so, you know, with Paul, with hydroelectric and stuff, that water's got to get through the ground, through the bedrock and everything, into the cave, into the spring, and then come out of the spring, and then he can harness it from there.
Well, for months now, I've got three reservoirs. I got the springs up in the cliff, and then I got, it goes into old wooden tanks, been there forever. And then I've got two plastic tanks further down the hill.
Uh-huh.
Well, they normally water just boiling out of the top of them tanks coming from that spring. But for the last 2 months, no water has been coming out of those tanks.
Yeah.
I mean, we're getting enough usage because it feeds both houses down there also. So
yeah.
Between Susan doing laundry and dishes and everything, and same with me, it's the tanks aren't staying completely full.
Yeah.
And now, today I come down over the hill and I looked over and water just pouring out of that bottom tank.
Well, that's good.
You know, but it took, like you said, it took a couple of days for it to do it.
Yeah. Talking about the rain and stuff, so... Paul, you remember when you was working over Harper's Ridge that I drove that little mini truck over there that one time and stuff. So that thing's been broke down for about, I don't know, 8 months now. The CV joint went out of it.
Well, I thought that was the only time it ever ran was when you brought it over there.
No, I actually used it on the farm quite a bit and stuff, but I use it more in the wintertime because it is so easy to get around the farm stuff when it's super muddy.
It's easy to pull out when it's stuck too, right?
Yeah, that and like when it's super muddy like it is right now and stuff, the ground's pretty saturated. And so I had to take that thing out, take the CV joint out. You can't just buy a CV joint for those trucks and stuff. Really? You got to send them off and get them repaired, and then they send it back to you. I finally got that thing back in the mail Friday before we came in here. And so Monday, I'm going to get that thing back up and running and stuff, because today I had to go out and repair a 30-foot piece of fence with some bull panel. And taking that big old 2500 truck and a cattle trailer.
And it wet out there.
It is bad muddy out there. And so I didn't get stuck. I was sliding around pretty bad because that cattle trailer pulling me back
around,
and stuff. But I was able to get the fence done or get it repaired and then get back home without getting stuck and everything. Then I took a water hose and was washing it off there and everything and stuff. And I was like, hey, you know, it probably looks better now than it did before I hit the farm. You know, it ain't had a bath in a while.
Yeah.
And stuff. But I'm getting that little farm truck finished and stuff, because now we're getting into the time of year to where it's going to get muddy. It's going to stay muddy until the ground freezes. And then it's going to heat up and thaw, and then
it's so nice over there where I'm at. We don't have mud.
Yeah,
You know, it's all that creek gravel down in the ground. It just perks so good, and you know, very few places over there are muddy. I have one little spot in the barn lot down there where there's a lot of clay ground.
Yeah,
and when I first brought that old backhoe up there, I went down and got a bunch of creek rock, and I rocked all the way around the barn, and I rocked two trails up to the barn.
Yeah.
You know, and I know where those trails are, and I can drive on them, and I don't.
You won't stir the mud up, huh?
Well, I've been stuck down there in the barn lot before, the four-wheel drive. But that's the only place in the hollow that it gets muddy.
Yeah, and stuff. But so I finally got my truck. I'll have to put it back together Monday, which is supposed to be extremely cold.
Well, I think for the next week or so it's going
to
be.
And so, lucky me and stuff, I get to, I'll be in the barn, but my barn has no heat, no electric, no water.
Well, at least the wind ain't blowing in there.
Funny that you say that. You got that 6-inch gap underneath your doors.
Oh, yeah, okay, well, you got around your ankles is where it's blowing.
And I'm going to be working on my back trying to get that CV joint, which is the front axle.
Well, you might as well just pull it out in the sunlight where you can do it, you know.
No, I'm just going to leave it in the barn. You know, it's a CV axle, so it can't go forward or reverse right now until I get that thing in there.
Yeah, well.
But, so we finally got that thing, getting it fixed and everything. It's kind of fun to drive. It's right-hand steering and stuff. So you're driving down the road on the wrong side of the cab and everything. So the funny part of that is I've drove it for years. My cousin Jeremy's drove it several times. And usually we chase cattle with it and stuff. When the cows get out, we'll take it and, you know, go get them back up and everything. And you run, you get out, you run, you open the gate, and then you run back to the truck just to figure out that you are on the wrong side of and stuff. The steering wheel's on the other side. So you got to run around to the other side and get in and
so,
take
it. So it looks a little bit like Keystone Cops out there, huh?
Yeah, it does and stuff. Getting in on the wrong side of the truck a lot and stuff. I don't care how much you get used to driving it and everything and stuff. Every time you get up, because you're so used to using the other trucks and everything.
Well, it was like me coming over here today. I'm so used to going down Hardwick Creek, you know, to go to work that you hear I'm driving along coming off through Furnace, you know, and I'm about halfway down Furnace Mountain down Hardwick Creek, you know, and I said, wait a minute now.
You know, wrong way.
My dog was supposed to tell me we were going to turn back here. It was her fault.
So you're supposed to go down 213, not 1057.
You talk about chasing cows around with that little thing up in Virginia. Uh-huh. Gordon and I had an old bull calf we was raising, and I had an old mule. And both of them would get out of the lot at the same time, and they'd go to the back 40, and they'd get in the corn back there, and they'd just start tearing up. And I had a 305 Honda Dream, if any of you old people out there remember the little Hondas, and had it stripped down, you know, just a bare frame, no mufflers on it. And we'd chase that mule and that cow with it, and they'd hear that thing coming. They'd already start back towards the barn as soon as they heard it. They did not like that thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Too loud.
I could make one big circle around the back 40 there, you know, and the time I got back up to the barn, they were back in their lot acting like, oh, where you been? You know?
So we finally got that thing back. Well, it will be back and running next week, hopefully. And stuff, if it's not so cold that you can't.
Well, see, I've got to take the bed off my Ford Ranger out there, too. My rear frame is in bad shape.
Yeah, you're telling me that and stuff.
Yeah, I've got the metal cut and everything, and I'm hoping I don't have to take the bed all the way off. I'm going to try to unbolt it and just kind of raise it up, you know. But I got one spring, the rear shackles broke plumb loose from the frame.
Oh, okay.
I got a 2x4 above it to keep from pushing the big dent in the bed, you know? so it's gonna be interesting. And
well, if you need some help taking the bed off, it ain't no problem. I just had to take the bed off my 2500 the other day.
Well, I've had them off both my other trucks,
and I actually peeled it off by myself and everything with the help of a chain hoist.
Well, that's what I'm gonna do, you know.
And so finally got the fuel pump fixed in my white truck and everything. So
well, if I had to, I'd fire that old backhoe up and just pick the whole bed up and set it off. But
there you go.
Now, that little Toyota T100 I've got, it's got a full-size bed on it, and they're a heavy little truck.
Uh-huh.
And that hoist I got down there in the barn, it's hanging on a black locust beam. And I picked the entire cars off the ground with it, but it picked that bed off that Toyota, and I just drove out from under it.
Yeah.
So this little Ford Ranger's got a small bed on it, and I know it ain't got near the metal in it. And so, but what I'm afraid of, if I take it off down there, then I got that spring poking up in there, and it's going to be weird driving it up to the shop.
Maybe not. All right, let's see. What else was we going to talk about on here?
You said you had things.
I had things and stuff. Let's talk. Okay, so I carry a lot of tools in the bed of my truck because I have... I'll be working on a rental house 1 minute, going to the store working for another minute, and then going to a storage building or going back to the farm.
Got to take everything you got.
And so I got to take everything I got with me and stuff and not have to go back to the barn and drop something off and pick something else up and you'll take back off with it again. So I keep a lot of water pumps and stuff that I'm – all my grinders and stuff like that I know that I might need and stuff. I keep that on the truck at all times. Here in the last – I don't know, year and a half, I've noticed that I carry my leaf blower with me a lot more than I used to and stuff. And I went to Winchester and bought a backpack leaf blower and stuff. It's got the trigger and stuff on it. The hose wraps around you and stuff. Takes all the weight off your arms and puts it on your back. Especially when you're up on roofs and stuff. Now, why would I be on a roof with a leaf blower?
Drain gutters and just...
Exactly and stuff. So this tool is a multi-function tool. I clean the rain gutters with the leaf blower. If it's a shingle top house, I'll get up on the roof and take the leaf blower and blow the stuff out. Now, it does make a mess. I am not going to lie and stuff. And everybody's like, yeah, that's just stupid and everything. It beats the tar out of digging it out by hand.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff, moving your ladder down, dig it out by hand, moving your ladder down and stuff. I can walk, you know, on a 100-foot building with gutter on both sides of it and everything. I can be done in about 20 minutes.
Well, where it'd be nice for me is that my hill road, my new road there, you know, I got to scrape over it all the time, but getting in the ditch line with the tractor's real difficult. And years like this year where we've had so many leaves, and we never had any rain coming with them, you know, to wash them off as they was coming down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that ditch line got full.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I had a blower, you know, I could get just walk down that ditch line and blow it all out into the road and then pull it off the road.
That's a good idea, too. I've noticed that I keep it there in the truck and stuff because when I get done bush hogging and stuff, I take it and blow the top of the bush hog off.
Well.
And then in the wintertime, you know, this is when I really started using and stuff. It was last year. Before I leave the house in the morning to go to work, I blow the snow off my truck, off my wife's car, off the neighbor's truck, and then try to clean as much as I can with the driveways and everything. If it's a light, fluffy snow and stuff, it ain't no problem to blow off the driveways and everything.
Oh, wet snow.
But that heavy wet snow and stuff, you're just wasting your time with it and stuff. I'll blow sidewalks off with it and everything.
It'd be great in my shop. Well, I got a dirt floor and open sides. I go in there sometimes. I think I got a tree planted in there somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Get on one end of the shop and just keep blowing to the other end.
And stuff. There's a good idea. And then, so, you know, this one thing that it's only made to, you know, blow leaves so much and so forth and everything, as I've got it to use, you know, for the bush hog, for you could use it on the ditches.
A multi-purpose tool.
Yeah, the multi-purpose tool and stuff. And so, you know, I was sitting there thinking, you know, I was telling Paul we do this article and everything. You know, what's other thing that you have laying around that you could use multiple places, like a garden hoe and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, people don't think about, you know, well, garden hoe, you use it in the garden.
Yeah.
Well, let's say you got to mix a wheelbarrow full of mud up, you know. Uh-huh. Well, you use it for that. Well, you got a little ditch line down here that needs cleaned out, you know. Uh-huh. You can scrape down that ditch line with it.
Yeah.
You know, chase the cat, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of things
clean
you can do with
it. Clean out the culvert.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm using one right now on this house I'm working on. They got porches started all the way around. I'm working that new cellar entrance down there.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm having to pull dirt and gravel and stuff from underneath that porch over to backfill. And, I reach out there with that, you know, just using it for a drag.
And stuff. And so, you know, I've been reading articles and stuff. But this is the time of year where I'm in the wood shop working on different things. And so for my 45th birthday, John and Alicia bought me a knife carving set.
I thought you were only 23.
I am 23.
Oh, okay.
Real age 45, but in spiritual age, I'm 23.
Remember, Lloyd, no lying on this show.
Okay. And so, spiritual age.
Oh, okay. All right. You're cool.
And they get me this knife or the spoon carving set. And the knife blades are extremely sharp. It's probably one of the sharpest tools I've ever had in my life.
Be careful.
Well, funny that you say that and stuff. So I get on Amazon and Google the other day and stuff. And I was like, wonder what other kind of kits this company makes and everything. Well, the first thing is not a kit that you buy, but tape that you wrap around your fingers so you don't cut yourself up.
That'd be a good idea.
That stuff. So they got this blue flexible tape that is not 100% cut proof, but cut resistant. And so you wrap your fingers with it three or four times and stuff. So when you're sitting there cutting these cutting your spoons and everything out, that you don't actually slip and you know, cut your finger off.
Well, I need that when I use my kraut hobble. They get sauerkraut, them blades sticking up, you know, and you run that cabbage through there.
And this thing is so cool. So I've already made one spoon. They gave it to me last Saturday, And here it is Saturday again. I've already made one spoon with it. I made a cherry spoon just for Teresa.
Yeah, I saw a picture. It did pretty.
And I got it oiled and everything for food use and stuff. It's got a good thick coat on it and everything. And those, and so me and John was talking on the phone stuff. He says, I know you're going to use it for more than what it's intended for and everything. I was like, well, shoot, yeah. Because you know how much woodworking you could do with this bowl-shaped carver and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Super sharp. Real fine detail if you wanted to do fine detail with it and everything. The other two knives that came with it, you know those X-Acto knives that are real sharp?
Oh, yeah.
Well, this thing would put that to shame. And stuff, it's so sharp.
Well, those X-Acto knives, they don't stay sharp long either.
No, uh-uh.
They dull down quick.
And so it comes with a piece of leather strapping or stropping, and it's got some grit with it and stuff. So you put the grit on the leather.
Keep it honed down
and
good.
And keep it honed down and shiny and stuff. And as long as it's shiny, it's sharp.
Yeah.
And stuff, it's as sharp as a scalpel is. And then it comes with a gouge and stuff. So when you get the your fine cuts, or you get your bowl of the spoon done and everything, you got to gouge your middles out and everything, and watch out, because anybody knows what works with cherry and stuff is when you go to gouging, you get into a pocket of wood there, and it's just going to split all the way out.
Cherry's not easy to work with.
Cherry is not easy to work, and I found that out the hard way.
Buckeye's good.
And I got some mimosa laying around, which is a super hard wood. And then they say to use cherry and white oak for the spoons and stuff, because it is such a dense wood, harder wood to work with and everything. But you just got to watch out for the cherry, because if you hit one of those splines and stuff, you can go all the way out with it.
Well, I know I used to turn bowls on a lathe years ago when I was younger, and we used buckeye. They call it what, cucumber here?
Yeah.
But it's same wood. But it'd make nice bowls, and they never split. And
so, you know, I was sitting around the shop stuff, and I've got all these different carving chisels and everything sitting in the shop for all these different types of wood and everything. And then I added these three or four pieces to it and everything. And I was just like, wow, this is really cool that, you know, they spent some money on this. It wasn't a cheap set by no means.
Yeah.
And stuff. But it's whittling with a purpose, if
right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
People like to whittle all the time, make different little trinkets and keychains and stuff like this and stuff. This is whittling for a purpose.
I remember years back when us boys first moved to Kentucky, we lived over around Ross's Creek over there in Estill County. And this one boy come in, and I'm trying to remember his name, and I can't think of it right now, but he just was lost.
Uh-huh.
He didn't know what to do. He couldn't figure out where to go or anything. You know, some people were letting him stay there, and somebody gave him a pocket knife.
Uh-huh.
And he was sitting there on the porch watching a little bird, and there was some firewood there, and there was a little knotty piece. And he went to carve him. Before he was done, he had that bird. And the last I heard, this guy's internationally famous.
Really?
Yeah, he carves out eagles, all the feathers and everything in them. But he had that talent and didn't know it.
Yeah.
He sits there just blindly whittling around looking at that bird, and next thing you know, he had a little bird in his hand, a wooden bird. But he's become world famous.
Huh. Well, that's kind of cool.
And then they say he still comes back to Kentucky to get walnut stumps.
Funny that you're talking about that stuff. Me and Dad was sitting there waiting on the grocery truck the other day, and I was telling him about a story that we went, me and my grandpa Eugene, he used to live up around 1057 there, and we was driving down an old country road one day and stuff. He says, look at $1,000 tree over there. And I'm like, $1,000 tree? I said, where do you see $1,000 tree at? And he says, look, that you see that branch where it somebody's cut it off or it fell off or something other, and it's made that big old knot and everything. I was like, yeah, I see that. He said, them knots is what they make out of expensive furniture and stuff out of. and stuff. So you take those
like a burl or something.
It's a burl is what it is and stuff, or not, you know, whatever you want to call it. And you cut that thing out, you let it dry out for a long time because the moisture is way down in there and it's really hard wood. And so after you get it dried out and everything, you can take those, a good size burl, I mean like a, you know, 6 inch, 8 inch, 10 inch burl and stuff on a side of a hardwood tree could fetch $1,000 easy.
Well.
Now, everybody don't be going out in the forest and looking for burls and cutting the trees down. No, don't be doing that.
Start walking around with my little handsaw.
And stuff. Because you got to cut almost the entire tree down and get the burl out. Yeah, and stuff. So,
well, it's back into the trunk.
Yeah, it's back into the trunk and everything. It started at the trunk and it's worked its way out and everything. So, but, you know, once the tree passes of natural causes and stuff, you go in and cut the burl out because the burl will be the last thing on the tree that rots and stuff because it's such hard wood and stuff. It's so protected because of the bark and everything and stuff. But those can fetch a lot of money and stuff to the right buyers and stuff. You have to find...
Well, I'd say this guy that carves them little birds when he comes down here, he probably tries to get some of them too.
Yeah, and stuff. Them burls, them knots and stuff, them are really the hardest wood you can do and everything. And... have you ever seen an expensive couch and it's got the wood hanging out of it there at the arm and everything?
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. Them were made out of burls and stuff. They make feet out of burls.
Oh, yeah. Well, I...
And stuff. They make different things that, you know, high polish, very strong pieces, you know, there at the end of the arm and everything. That takes a whole lot of pressure because you're using it to stand up, you're using it to sit down and everything, so you're always grabbing hold of that arm.
Well, I know a lot of the old overstuffed furniture used beechwood for frames because beech was so tough.
Yeah, and so that, you know, that's why they use that knot and stuff, or burls they call it, on them furniture and everything.
Well, cool.
And stuff. But to get back to the other story we was talking about of multi-use items, we talked about the hoe. Talked about the leaf blower and stuff. I was using the draw knife the other day and stuff.
Well, they're a handy tool. I keep two of them
and stuff. I was in Paris, Kentucky, going down their shops there on Main Street and stuff. And I went into the shop. They had a bunch of woodworking tools in there. And they had patina on them, and you can tell they hadn't been used in years and everything. And so I see this draw knife sitting there, and it was about an 8-inch straight line, straight shaver and stuff with two curled handles on it and everything. And the ones I usually see, they got straight handles, but this one had curved handles on it. And I was like, well, I think I could use that. Debarking trees and everything. And
make handles through broken tools. And
yeah. And I asked the guy, I said, how much you want to sell this for and stuff? He says, to you, I'll sell it to you for $25. And I said, you sell it to me for $20, you got a deal. He said, give me $20, you can have it. All right. Cool. He said, you going to hang it up in your shop? And I'm like, hang it up in my shop.
I've had people tell me that, too. It's going in the back of the truck. So it's going to the job.
What do you mean, hang it up in my shop?
It looks good up there, Lloyd. It looks good hanging there.
No, it's a tool and stuff with a very sharp edge on it, very good handles, looked very good. All it needs is to be ran through wood. Yeah. To be usable again.
Well, no, I've got tools hanging on the porch out there. People say, well, that's cool where you hang these. I said, yeah, but they're there so I can, when I get ready to use one, I can reach over and get it and take it.
Now, I do have some rusty tools that will never, ever work again.
Well, speaking of rusty tools, I used to have a fro.
Yeah.
For splitting shingles. And I had a big fro. I mean, you could drive boards with it. And it disappeared. And the other day I was down there, Susan's son, Kenny, moved. Fixing up a trailer down the end of the hall. He said, I found something that it might belong to you. He had my fro, and he's had it for the last 15, 20 years, you know? And it's all rusted up now, you know.
But yeah.
I said, yeah, I remember that handle. The handle was an old splitting maul handle that broke. It fit right in there perfect. And
Yeah.
And so I've got it back now.
And stuff. So when I bought that draw knife off that guy and stuff, he's like, you gonna stick it on? Well, heck no, I ain't sticking it on. I'm sticking it on the toolbox.
Yeah.
And stuff. And I literally still carried it around in my toolbox every day. And that was, you know, 6-7 years ago and stuff, because, like I said, I got the wood shop and everything, so I used it in the wood shop. I do not have a wood lathe. That would be nice one of these days.
They are nice.
To have a, you know, just a El Cheapo would even be cool and stuff. But I make axles for old wooden wheels and stuff, and make flower baskets.
Hell, legs for tables or anything.
You know? Or anything like that. And just like cedar trees, you got to debark a cedar tree. You got to debark the locust trees and everything to use them as post and stuff, because that moisture gets in behind that bark.
Right, you got to get it off there.
And it will rot your wood.
Well, that's where that draw knife comes in
quicker. And so the draw knife will take that bark off your trees and stuff. So if you're cutting cedar posts and stuff, take the bark off of it, but take it off with a draw knife. So much simpler, so much easier.
Well, they used to make a tool called a bark spud.
Yeah, bark spud.
It had a curved chisel blade, had about a 2-foot long handle.
Uh-huh.
And you just stood back and just worked it down the log, you know, and it peeled the bark right off of it. They were pretty handy.
And then, you know the old carpenter chisels, the big ones?
Oh, I've got several of
stuff
them.
It's 2 and 3 inches mm-hmm. wide. And
they're called slicks.
Slicks. They're about 18 inches long,
yeah.
Most of them. And so
they have a wooden handle in them too.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was looking around online the other day, and I'm always interested in wood tools and finding new stuff to work with and everything. And they had a slick on there, and I'm like, man, that's a nice chisel and everything. But you can tell somebody had been hitting nails with it
mm-hmm.
and destroyed the end of it. And I was like, you know, that's going to take some work. And
well, they have a good enough steel in them old ones that you can
yeah.
grind them back down and refinish
and stuff. This would need to be refinished and rehoned and everything, and still make a nice chisel or slick. And I was got to looking around on the comments and stuff. The guy wanted $250 for the slick.
Oh, no.
I was like, okay, so this must be the same guy I got this draw knife off of and stuff. Something's supposed to hang in your shop for some reason. And so I texted the guy. I'm like, hey, man, how much do you want for this thing? He said, I want $250 for it. And I'm like,
they're not that hard to make.
I'm like, okay, is it made out of gold? Is it do
it's
something
just old, you know, and it's
yeah,
because it's old, it's worth $1 million, you know. It's but
I
you can you can take if you can find an old vehicle like a 1950s model truck, you know, take a piece of flat leaf spring out of
uh-huh.
one, weld you a piece of black iron pipe to it, big pipe, you know,
uh-huh.
where you can put a wooden handle in it, and you can hone that edge down, and you got you a slick chisel. And that old spring steel
uh-huh.
is just as good as that.
Yes, sir.
And you could make one if you got a little bit of welding stuff there to weld.
Yeah.
And you can make one.
Yeah. And I've seen that done on several videos and stuff. I've only ever seen it done once in real life. My uncle did it and stuff, where he took the Paul said, took the leaf spring off the back of a truck, cut it down, what was it, about 12, 14, 16 inches long?
Whatever you want. There's different slicks, you know.
And then honed a really sharp edge onto it, ground it down with a grinding wheel, and then went back with a stone
mm-hmm.
and got the finishing touch on it and everything. And they make really good slicks.
You see that one stone I've got, I think you and John were looking at it up there, that big heavy one with the real fine sandstone
yeah,
on it.
Yeah.
That thing was for 1800s. It was for grinding lenses for glasses.
Yeah, that's what you're telling me.
The thing weighs a couple hundred pounds. I can't pick it all the way up.
Yeah.
But I've got the original motor that came with that. It was a Briggs & Stratton side shaft motor. And the motor's so old that the model number on it is Model N. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and that ran that thing, and it was for grinding lenses. It had a little thing in there where it went back and forth, but I got a little electric motor on it now, and if I want to sharpen my chisels and really hone them down,
uh-huh.
I fire that thing up, and I mean, it's got the smoothest sand rock, big round rock on it, and
yeah.
It'll put a razor edge on anything. It's
okay.
Great on chisels, pocket knives.
Uh-huh. I know.
Multi-purpose tool. You can make your glasses with it or sharpen your chisel.
Yeah, see, they actually ground glass with that you know, back in the day and everything to make the convex and concave glasses and everything. But what other tools could we put on the multi-purpose? You said the wheelbarrow stuff.
The wheelbarrow is one of the most versatile tools. You know, I'm using mine to haul my firewood back and forth to the house. Uh-huh. You know, I use it in the garden to spread my compost and mulch around my garden. Uh-huh. If I used it to lay the bricks up on my chimney, if anybody remembers that story. just hauling gravel from the creek. Anything you want, you got to have that wheelbarrow.
Yeah, they actually make a multi-purpose wheelbarrow now that you can buy online. It's way expensive, more expensive
than they're $129 just for a cheap one, you know.
And this is $200-$400.
Yeah.
And they actually have one that has a lip that comes out that you can use it for a two-wheeler. You can take the body off of it, and you can leave the body on it and haul dirt, rock, whatever, and then you can take it off and add another thing to the flip and make it to where you can haul cut firewood to your house.
Well, they used to make an old wheelbarrow that just had like a flat bed on it. Uh-huh. And a little back. And you could lay your wood up on it, or you could haul straw or anything out to the barn on it. Or.
And stuff. I have one of those garden wagons there at the house, and I've made using a Rubbermaid square tote into a water cart for and stuff, because my water spigot's way up front of the front of the house, and we've just not put a spigot into the back of the house. So we take that thing around to the front, put the garden hose in it, takes about 15 minutes for it to fill up and everything. I don't know how many gallons it holds, like 40 or 60 gallons or whatever it is and stuff. And then we can take that garden cart and pull it around to the side of the house or and stuff. And then we have spigots made into the bucket there and stuff, to where we can run a water hose off of it, or we can fill the water canisters up with it or whatever and stuff.
Well, you know, the way I like to recycle, and you do too, Lloyd, anything that's been made and it's solid can be a multi-purpose item. You know, I don't care what it was designed for originally. You can find another use for it.
Oh, yeah.
Look at my little hydroelectric plant. You know, everything on that was designed for some other purpose.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so, you know, it's multi-purpose stuff, you know. It depends on what you want to do.
He's got squirrel cages from unit.
It was an exhaust fan out of the kitchen and a restaurant that blowed the exhaust from above the grill. Great big aluminum outfit, paddle wheel thing.
Yeah.
The pulley, it's my paddle wheel.
Uh-huh.
The pulley that I'm using is a 14-inch bicycle rim.
Yeah.
The alternator is a wind turbine. I took the blades off, put a pulley on it.
Yeah.
And it's just got different little things, you know, screwed onto it. And talking about that thing again, you know how I'm always trying to get more and more power out of it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm using an 1.25-inch water pipe coming from my spring down. It uh-huh. feeds the houses and tees off over to the hydro plant.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've got an 1.25-inch brass valve.
Yeah.
That's what it says on it, 1.25. You know, you put 1.25 fittings and everything on there. Well, it got to where it was leaky and it was water running all the time. And I said, well, I'll go down. And I got an 1.25 plastic valve and put on there. Well, when I took the 1.25 brass valve off, when it's all the way open, I took a tape measure and measured in there. Well, it's only letting 1 inch of water through.
Yeah.
They say 1.25, but it's only letting 1 inch of water through.
Yeah.
Well, the plastic one I put on there, it opens all the way open.
Uh-huh.
I gained another 10 watts of power.
Yeah, just
by just changing the water valve on it.
From a plastic valve to a
took the brass valve off.
Brass valve off to a plastic valve.
Yeah.
And stuff. You know, that's you know, we was working on that water heater before we came over here and stuff. On the cold water side of a water heater, there's a tube inside the water heater that takes the cold water all the way to the bottom. And then when it gets to the end of that tube, then it goes across and then the hot water siphons out of the tank.
Right.
And I did not know this and stuff. I've never taken a hot water apart and stuff, and we couldn't figure out why there was cold water coming through the hot water side and stuff. And still right now, we still are in the mind boggle of what's going on.
I'd have to think about that one.
And so you get hot water for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then it starts sucking cold water.
It's got a hole or a broken seam or something in there.
Something going on and stuff. And so we are boggling our minds and stuff, trying to figure out that thing and everything.
That sounds like you do for another hot water heater.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, but that thing's only...
That don't mean
two
anything.
2 years old.
Well, look at the junk they're making these days.
Oh,
Lord.
Yeah.
You buy a brand new car, you know, and it's in and out of the shop, you know, 4 or 5 times before you can drive it.
I'm glad you brought that up, stuff. I took a picture the other day. They have some new tractors coming out and stuff. If you all remember the old International Farm Alls.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff, they made, what, 6, 7, 8 different models.
Well, I had a Cub.
And so I have several of those tractors sitting over on the farm and stuff that my uncle and my cousin bought.
And, M's and Super M's and H's and Super H's. And
yeah, so they had bukus of different models and stuff. Well, now there's a Tillman tractor that is being manufactured for cultivating tractors based off of the old Farmall kind of tractors and stuff. They're skinny-tired. All the weights in the rear end and stuff.
They go good in the mud.
They go good in the mud. So all it is a 26 horsepower Kohler engine with a hydrostatic pump on it, and that's what runs the rear end and stuff. And it has a lot of the same attachments as the old Farmalls did. And kind of still hook up the same
way.
Well,
you could run the wide belts. You could run anything off them things.
Uh-huh. And so base model was $18,000.
Woo!
Yeah, base model and stuff. And then you start adding it comes with a metal seat and stuff. To upgrade it is $250 to put a cushion on it.
I'll sell them a cushion for $5. I got several on the porch.
And so, but there's all these different options and stuff. It's the same tractor, but it's got different uses and stuff, just like, you know, the multi-tools we talked about and everything. But it's a new tractor line coming out that's based off the old farm.
Well, you know, you're talking about them old Farmalls. Gordon and I worked on a dairy farm up in Frederick, Maryland for a while. And winters get pretty bad up there. And we had a 1030 and 1070 case tractors, big fancy ones. And we had to haul silage out of a silage pit. Well, them tractors would get, as soon as we filled them wagons full of silage, them big case tractors would get stuck. And we had this old Super M, and it didn't have a starter on it. I had to back it up on a hill and shut it off and chalk the wheels and all that and everything, you know. But you kick a chalk out and roll the thing over a hill, it'd start right up. You'd back up that big case and the silage wagons and pull it right out of the pit. You know, that thing was great, you know.
Yeah, if you ever need a tractor stuck, call me.
Yeah, I heard you're about the best that there is. And I'm good at log houses and rocks. Lloyd's good at tractor sticking.
Oh, yeah. I'm really good at tractor sticking. If you think you got a vehicle or a tractor that can't get stuck,
call Lloyd.
You ain't got the right operator.
Well, you know, you're talking about tools you have to carry in your truck. You know, people think, you know, well, Paul, you work on log houses and you do a little rock work. And why do you need so many tools in your truck?
Uh-huh.
Well, tools break down. You have to fix tools. You have to, you know, you got to have, I have to have the grinder. You know, I have to have different drills. Uh-huh. I have to have all this stuff and an assortment of screws and nails and things that'll work and a couple different toolboxes. And, you know, you just can't put enough stuff in the truck.
No, you can't stuff. I carry a generator. I carry a air compressor. Mm-hmm. And everything, and everybody's like, do you really use that? I start that generator just about every day and stuff. It is cabled into my truck frame and stuff, so somebody can't just take off with it,
right?
And everything. I thought about that well beforehand and everything, because Thieving was going pretty good there in Montgomery County there for a while and stuff, so I cabled it to the frame and stuff. Good luck trying to take off of that one and stuff. And then the air compressor is actually cabled to the generator and stuff, so, you know, good luck on that one too. But I actually use that generator a lot because trying to get if you have a farm, if you have a homestead, if you have a tractor, period, if you have a lawnmower,
you're going to need electric out there somewhere.
You're going to have a lot of flat tires.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually keep a bottle of that tire. It's not tire inflator and stuff. It's the ooze that goes inside the
that green stuff, slime.
Yeah, it's like slime and stuff. It's a little bit better quality than slime, but I keep a bottle of that with me. I keep the tire valve replacer and everything, and then I have the air right there and stuff. And then I have air tools and stuff, so if I break down in the field and stuff, everything I need's right there on that truck.
If you can find it in there.
That's the problem I have.
Well, that old ton Ford I've got, you know, I've had it for years, and it's a crew cab. And back when I was on the road working all the time, the back seat was completely crammed full. The toolbox on the back was completely crammed full. And it was full level with the bed all the way to the tailgate of tools, and I needed them.
Uh-huh.
And there was times I'd get to a job, and I go, I don't have what I need. I'd have to run down to a hardware store, parts store somewhere, and get something.
Yeah.
Just to do the job.
Yeah. So I know I have it. It's actually doing the finding spot that mm-hmm. we have trouble with.
Well, I started cleaning my toolbox out on my truck today because I got to take the bed off of it, fix the frame.
Yeah.
And I said, well, there's where those pencils went. There, you know, I started finding things down the bottom of that toolbox that I'd gave them up as gone.
Well, you know, we was putting in a sink drain yesterday, and Dad goes, hey, you got your drain trap thing that goes down in there and holds it? And I'm like, yeah, I got one. Where's the dad? I couldn't tell you. And so he used his, and it was the wrong size, or the wrong pattern. And so I went and grabbed one. Guess what? It was the wrong size, wrong pattern. And then I found my old one and brought it in. Guess what? It was the wrong size, wrong pattern and stuff. So we actually went and bought a new drain because the new drains are just about all universal now.
Right, yeah.
And so they actually – so we got three of these tools that actually will fit that new drain now and stuff. It would not fit the drain because it was in a house built back in, you know, in the 40s or something like that. And it was still good and everything. It just the seal had went out of it. And trying to get that nut off the bottom of it without, you know, destroying your threads, good luck.
Well, you know, things that have to have these special tools. Look, that old, like I said, that old ton truck of mine, when I first bought it, it had the wrong hub nuts on it.
Yeah.
And I had trouble with the wheel bearings going out. And I had to buy a special socket, great big outfit, you know, to fit that hub nut.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't always have it with me, and it seems like 9 out of 10 times I was going to break down in Irvin, and I'd get pulled into Perry's down there. So I ended up buying another one of those sockets to leave it at Perry's.
Yeah.
And then I realized, you know, it had a whole wrong nut assembly on there, and I got the right stuff. Well, it uses a small socket, and I don't need that.
Yeah.
I was in Perry's the other day, and it's still got that socket. It's been hanging in there for like 25 years now. You know, I said, you ever use that for anything? No, that's antique. I just keep it up here to show people. But it had to have that special socket. You know, I had an old Harley one time. You had to have a special wrench just to get one of the jug bolts off.
Uh-huh.
I made one. You know, had to bend it a certain way.
So. Yeah.
And a lot of the old vehicles, the old Model Ts and Model As had to have special wrenches. That
yes, they did. And stuff. Dad has a Model A there at the house. Stuff. He's got special tools to work on it.
Yeah.
That stuff.
They weren't multi-purpose tools. They had one purpose, and that was bad, you know.
And even that little truck that I have stuff, the lug nuts on it are from Japan and stuff. They're not. They are made completely different. It's got little ridges in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to go buy a special socket. And that thing, when you use it on your tool. As soon as you take it off the tool, you put it back in the glove box. And stuff, because I've been caught out before and be like, oh no, where's that tool?
Well, Susan, my neighbor there,
stays in the glove box.
She had a flat on that little Ford car she bought.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what kind of Ford it is, just a little bitty Ford four-door. And she called me. I was up here at Millersburg. She said, I got a flat and I can't get my wheel off.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, I'm on my way back through. I'll be there, you know, and it was parked out there on Watson Ridge. I came back to the house, got two different four-way lug wrenches. One was metric and one was standard. And got every old lug wrench. It took about half inch and 3/8 inch drive sockets up there, and could not find one socket, lug wrench, or anything would fit the lugs on that car. I had to call Baber. He come, got the car, took it down there, and he lucked out. And he had one socket back there in the shop that would fit the lugs on that car.
Real? That's crazy.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, make things like that. And
yeah. Alrighty, folks, we have ran over our time for this show.
We out already?
Yeah, we out.
We're just starting to think, you know. We're starting to think about stuff now.
I know. It's just
well, next time on the way over here, I'm going to record myself on my phone of the stuff I'm thinking about. Because as soon as I get here, you know, we talk outside for a few minutes, and then the time I get in here and sit in this old uncomfortable chair, I done forgot what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you hear this, Ethan? Uncomfortable chair. Yeah, all right. Right, folks, we are done for this show. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Stuff.
Well, I did.
And stuff. Me and Paul, we can talk about anything and everything all day long, and stuff. So, but this will probably be our last show before Christmas and everything. So, everybody have a wonderful and happy Merry Christmas. Try to stay as warm as you can, because it's supposed to get bad cold.
Yeah, buddy, I got plenty of wood out there in that shed.
And stuff. It's not supposed to get above freezing for about 5 or 6 days there.
Well, that pot of soup beans is only going to last me about 3, so I'm going to have to figure out something else to. And I've been using, if Ms. Banks is listening to this show, I'm using the tar out of that little cooking stove I bought off of you.
He does use it. He's not lying there.
I cook my breakfast on it every morning, and I cook my dinner on it every evening.
And stuff. It's a nice little stove stuff.
All I do is take a couple scoops of coals out of my heating stove, put in that thing, throw a little scrap wood in on it, and it's cooking.
Oh, yeah. And stuff. I know you's cooking breakfast or something in there all that day. Me and John come over.
I cook on it every day. Don't it add that extra heat to the house. And
yeah.
It's just fun, you know.
All righty, folks. Everybody have a great, safe, wonderful weekend and Christmas and stuff. Hope you get what you wanted from Santa Claus and everything.
Ho, ho, ho.
And we'll see you here the week after that. So everybody have just a great and wonderful weekend. Paul, you got anything else to add?
Nope.
All righty, though. See y'all.
Bye.
Love the Lord and do to the day I'm dead. I'll be working on my old homestead.